We're pleased to bring you this presentation from the 2012 NCHE Conference held in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Recorded live by Manna Recording and Duplication.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the 2012 North Carolina Home Educators Conference. Y'all excited? I've been looking forward to this since September, actually, when I decided I was going to apply to speak, and I'm so blessed that the NCHE board let me have this opportunity with you today. As you already know, my name is Hope Auer, and the title of my session is How to Write a Book, A Homeschooler's Journey from Start to Finish. And I was homeschooled my entire life, and today I'm here to talk to you about what I've learned and what God has taught me and some things to do and what not to do regarding writing. So a little bit about me. I love stories from a young age. My parents both told me stories and read me stories all the time, and reading really does fuel a love for writing. And then homeschooling inspired me in a love for history and writing. In school, I was able to do a lot of creative writing, and my dad wrote my own history and writing curriculum, so I was able to study the fun parts of history, and I really developed a passion for research. In some of my first projects, as I said, I enjoyed writing since I was young, and so I would write little one-page chapters and put little books together, and I told myself stories all the time. And I started working on a play on the Book of Job when I was about 12, and a friend and I wrote an 8th Narnia book together, which is of course never going to get published, but that's something that really started me getting really interested in writing. And then my book, A Cry from Egypt, is published now. I started this book when I was 13, and it was supposed to be a short historical fiction based on the Exodus, or ancient Egypt, that I was supposed to write for my dad as a school assignment. And it was short. It was 25 pages. For those of you who know what writing short stories is, that is a very long story. So my dad actually said, this might have some potential to become a novel. So I've been working on it for 7 years, and it's born from there. My book is about the Exodus, like I just mentioned, in the Bible. And it's seen through the eyes of a 12-year-old girl named Jaira. She is a slave to the Egyptians, and you really learn about her trials and what she went through as a slave, and really get to see the Israelite side of the story. She also has some older brothers who are really the heroes of the story, and through their eyes, you also get to meet some of the other Egyptians, so you get to see both sides of the story. So let's talk a little bit about what I'm going to tell you today. I'm going to talk about why I write, what I've learned from writing a book, and what I know about publishing, and then finally, some parting words. So first, I want to talk about why I write and really writing for God's glory. And writing really is very, very important. God values writing so much that he gave us his word in a book, the Bible. The written word is very powerful, so powerful that that's the medium God used to give his word to us. And stories passed down through generations. I'm sure you all have family members, maybe parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles or good friends who are really good storytellers and tell stories all the time. I mean, I know all of you tell each other stories about what you did today and what you did last week and vacations. People tell stories all the time. Those get passed down from generations and generations, and our job as writers is to put it on paper. And then the word remember is mentioned in the Bible 227 times in reference to God telling people to pass on what he's taught them, his goodness, his acts, what he's done, especially to the Israelites. A lot of people pass down their stories for years and years and years and years. And every life is a story. I once heard it said that everyone could write at least one story, and that's their own. No matter how dull or boring you think your life might be, something will happen in your life that someone can learn something from. I've heard how important it is to journal, to really get your thoughts out on paper and things that happen to you that are eventful, so that one day you can share that with others. And finally, the message of the gospel, which is the most important thing for all men and women to know, was given to us in written form. So God must think that writing is important. But writing isn't the only thing that God thinks is important. God thinks that everything is important, and so whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. Put God first in your writing, even above status or money or fame. Christian books out there today aren't Christian. I remember when I was 16 and I was about to start on my publishing journey, I got really excited and I started looking at books in Christian bookstores, especially in the young adult section. And I remember picking up a book one day. I can't even remember the title or who the writer was now, but it was a series of three books written for young ladies. And I was reading the backs, and I was just shocked. It was this young lady was 14 or 15, and she had, I think it was five boyfriends in about the space of 6 months and was back to her original boyfriend. And God was never mentioned. And this was a quote-unquote Christian book that was being sold to young people in Christian bookstores all around the nation. And I was just thinking, you know, people at this age, they really need to be delving into God's Word. Yeah, we need to make books fun and interesting, but that's not encouraging them at all. It's adding so much worldly stuff to it, and God was never mentioned. It really wasn't Christian. I read a blog post recently about a Christian authoress who wrote romantic novels before. Even as a Christian, she wrote romantic novels that weren't Christian at all, and she was really convicted and realized that her life was meaningless, that any success she was getting was empty because she wasn't writing for God's glory. Proverbs 3, verses 5 through 6 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight." 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "Whether then you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." 1 John 2, verses 15 through 16 says, "Do not love the world nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." In Matthew 6, 33, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." And lastly, pray all the time about everything. God's inspiration is so much better than our own. One of my favorite parts in my story is when my main character, Jaira, actually has an encounter with God. She doesn't see him, but he speaks to her directly, and she hears him and feels him in her heart. And that came out of a time where I sat down, and I didn't know what to write that day. And I prayed to God, and I was just like, "You know, God, just, you know, whatever you want to do today, just help me to write something for you." And I just remember typing, and I went back to check my story later, and I was shocked by what I had written. It was so powerful, but I actually did not recognize what I had written. That was one of the few times I feel that God really wrote through me, where I was just a pencil, and I was just holding the pencil, and he was using me. It was such a great feeling. So now what I've learned from writing a book. Now, writing a book really isn't as easy as you might think. It does take a ton of work and researching and help from others. You have to be serious about writing once you start, and it's fun, but it's also hard. Once you get an idea, you need to do a lot of research. So what genre are you going to write, and what do you like to read personally? Because what you like to read, you're probably going to enjoy better. And is your idea original? You know, we don't want to write a book about four children who walk through a wardrobe and enter a magical land and save it and become kings and queens. Obviously, we all know that's the Chronicles of Narnia. But for fantasy especially, there is a lot of Christian fantasy out there today. And I've known people who just love the fantasy world and will actually write things that are almost exactly like parts of fantasy books without even realizing it. I had a friend once who wrote almost an exact paragraph from the book The Hobbit, and he had never read The Hobbit. It was just that we've become so indoctrinated with the fantasy culture that if we're writing fantasy, we really need to make sure our ideas are original. You know, research new weapons, your world, your language, your costumes, your characters in medieval times. Really try and be as original as possible. For historical fiction, which is what I write, or fiction or whatever else, make sure you delve into your sources and know the topic like the back of your hand. This is memorize facts and stories and look at them often as you write. I almost memorized certain parts of Exodus and I still got things wrong that we were catching even in my last draft. Once you do a lot of research, start working on a first draft. And don't worry if it's not written well or if you get stuck or something doesn't flow right. This is really just you getting your ideas out on paper for something that could be a complete book someday. And then get some help and accountability. You really should find a writing buddy. This could be a parent, a sibling, a close friend, an aunt, an uncle, cousin. Have them check your ideas and critique them and be honest. They also help you when you get stuck. And trust me, you will get stuck. And revise. Once you take your writing buddy or buddy's comments and corrections about your first draft, start a second book and start a second draft, taking what they've told you and make it better. And then think about whether or not to make the book a series. As you're working on your second or third draft, especially, because I decided to make my book a series, I'm going to write four books. The second book is in progress right now. It takes the Israelites from the Red Sea all the way to Mount Sinai and the golden calf and the Ten Commandments. And my third book is the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, and my fourth book is from the crossing of the Jordan River to Jericho and the settling of the land. So I've got some exciting stuff that I'm working on right now. But one of the topics I really wanted to talk about was emotional purity, because in Christian circles today, people talk a lot about physical purity, but they don't talk a lot about emotional purity. And I really wanted to address that, address getting emotionally entangled or having crushes or things like that. So I talk about that a lot in my second and third books, and I hint at it in my first book. But I realized as I was going through my second or third draft that while one of my characters does have a slight crush on somebody, I never addressed it as wrong like I wanted to. And I was thinking, oh, well, it'll get addressed in book two. Then I was like, wait a sec. What if nobody reads book two? I mean, what if something happens and it never gets done, or someone just buys the first book and not the second book? People might think I was condoning that, and I definitely didn't want that to happen. So I went backwards and had to fix some things. And I didn't make it huge, as I said, but I had to make sure that it was added into book one as well. And then I also realized that I have four books, and I really need someone or something that's going to tie all my four books together. And I got an idea from Brian Davis, who's the writer of Dragons in Our Midst series and the Oracles of Fire series, to add in an Egyptian girl who ends up going with the Israelites and who my main character, Jaira, befriends and really tries to help her understand what Yahweh and God is really like. And so she's in. I had to add her in to my book so that she would go all the way through. And obviously, she's pretty crucial to the story because she's the one thing tying all four books together. So let's talk a little bit about outlining. Always have some form of an outline once you start, because otherwise you're going to lose your plot and the flow of your story. And once you do that, the reader's not really interested anymore because it feels like you're floating around. There's lots of ways you can do this. There's traditional outlining, and this means writing down exact chapter titles, exactly who's in which section, exactly what happens. This is for the very detailed people, the detailed writers among us. A lot of people start by writing as you go, and often this is how you can only this is the only way you can start working on a first draft. But as I mentioned, if you don't have some form of an outline, you are going to lose the plot. And then writing backwards. I know people who do this, and my uncle does this. He started by writing the climax of his story and then went backwards from there because the climax was already written. Then he knew what to do to write to climb up to it and make it even better and more exciting. And then getting ideas, writing them individually, and then piecing them together. I went to a talk in the South Carolina Homeschool Conference by Stephen Kendrick, who's the brother of Alex Kendrick, and they're the writers and producers of Facing the Giants, Fireproof, Flywheel, and Courageous. And what they do when they write their scripts is they get ideas for scenes and write them on color-coordinated post-it notes. They have blue scenes for, or blue for sad scenes, and purple for normal everyday life, and orange for comedy, and pink for romance, and stuff like that. And then what they do is they lay all those out and try and piece them together to make an emotional journey. I don't know how many of you saw Courageous and Snake King Zane. So if you know what I'm talking about, the Snake King scene was a great comedy scene, and it was right in the middle of the section about where this girl died. And actually, that scene was not originally there in the movie. They had it almost all the way at the end. They had it almost right before the climax. And they realized, you know, we have about 45 minutes of this dark, depressing hole in our story. And so they brought that scene in there to make it more lively and exciting, and it really worked. I know you go from crying from being sad to crying because you're laughing so hard. It was a great twist. And then, yeah, as I said, definitely outline after your first draft and make sure you have a goal in your story and that you're always trying to meet that goal. So the first chapters. I can't write first chapters at all. I really can't. It took me 7 years, and I'm still not completely happy with the one I have in my book. And I'll show you an excerpt from my story in a minute that will show you the bad version and the good version. I either would go way too fast or way too slow, and it's just something you have to learn to do. And I can tell you some things to do. The first one is, of course, to introduce your character or characters and then show the problem or problem. And what I mean by the problems is, what's the hurdle that your character is going to have to cross over at the climax? You know, are they poor and need money? Is there family issues? Is someone lost spiritually or physically? And what is the bad guy's motive for hurting your characters? And I have two problems in my story. The first is that the Israelites are slaves and want to be free. And the second is that Jairus' mom believes in the Egyptian gods, while Jairus' father believes in Yahweh. And so there's all this conflict at home, and Jairus really torn about what she believes and why she believes it. And there's this deep inner struggle that she goes through throughout the entire book as she watches the plagues happen. Those are my two problems, and they're introduced within my first two chapters. And I can tell you what not to do. Too much detail. I was horrible at this. I would always say or state things that could have been made obvious in dialogue, and it really bogs the reader down. So let's talk about first sentences. Your first sentences are very, very important, because if your reader doesn't like your first couple of sentences and it doesn't grab them because it's dramatic or funny or scary, then they're just going to put the book down and never buy it or read it. So here's my first sentence, and we'll see what questions we can get from that. The first sentence of my book is, Jaira ran down the dark, narrow street. So what questions can we get from that? We can get, well, why is she running? Why is it dark? And who's Jaira? The next sentence is, her breath was coming in short, painful gasps, and her legs felt like they were made of putty. So we can figure out, well, she's been running for a while, but why was she running so long? Is something wrong? Why is she so tired? Here's my third sentence. Tired as she was, she could not let the Egyptian soldiers get her. So, oh, she's being chased, but why is she being chased? So those are my first three sentences. Do they grab you? Okay, good. And then here's my favorite, or my all-time favorite first sentence. It's from the book Voyage of the Dawn Treader by C.S. Lewis. There once was a boy named Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it. And not only is that just a very comical sentence, but it immediately grabs you because you're wondering, well, who is Eustace and why did he deserve such a horrible name? And then here's some other common mistakes that beginning writers make. As I mentioned, the amount of detail. Here's a sentence with way too much detail. The 8-year-old blonde little girl with big blue eyes, tiny white shoes, and a flowing pink dress sat on a small wooden swing tied to a giant white oak tree, looking very sad. So obviously that's way too much, but we could go the opposite extreme as beginning writers and not put in enough detail. We could just say the girl sat on a swing, which is not engaging at all because you're trying to get them to start reading your story, especially if that's a first sentence. So let's try happy medium, and let's try this. The little blonde girl sat sorrowfully on a swing in the shade of a giant oak tree. So that sets up the scene, but it also gets you thinking because you're wondering why the girl is sad. And really try not to put in a ton of detail because audiences like to use their imagination to see things. I mean, if you describe exactly what the characters look like and exactly what the scene looks like, you're fitting your audience into a box instead of letting them use their imagination to let the story come to life, which is really what you want them to do. And some other things I did was put in way too many commas, exclamation points, dashes, and ellipses. Read your story out loud to catch some of these errors. Exclamation points should be very rarely used, especially in description. And then I also put two spaces instead of one at the end of every period and before the beginning of the next sentence. And I didn't realize that was wrong, but in popular fiction today it is. And I didn't know that until I went to hit find and replace and hit two spaces and hit one space, and it doesn't work that way. So I had to go through and find every sentence and click, delete, click, delete, click, delete, and it took forever. So please save yourself the trouble. So now I'm going to read to you a section from my story. This was written back in 2007, so 5 years ago. This is part of one of my first chapters. Inside the mud hut, light was limited, there being only 4 windows cut into 2 sides of the house and 2 doors, one at each end. There were rotten wooden shutters to put over the windows for privacy, but they hardly ever used them since the windows were the only things that let in fresh air and light. The few cabinets and pots and pans were in the closest left corner, and an unsteady table was in the middle of the room, with makeshift stools surrounding it. There were beds set up against almost all the walls in the room, and a few other chairs, a weaving loom, a few baskets and chests of clothing and cloth completed the furniture in the house. Through the farthest window, you could see the muddy fields and gardens in which the Israelites grew their own food. The Egyptians gave them rations of flour, salt, sugar, and beans, but it was not enough to go around. So most Israelites grew some other fruits and vegetables. Jairus' family grew figs, watermelons, beets, radishes, turnips, lettuce, beans, and lentils. The sweet aroma that greeted Jaira as she entered the house told her that her mother and older sister had made some lentil stew for dinner. So, what did I do wrong? Too much detail, yes, way too much description. And didn't that just make you bored? Most of that was completely unnecessary, and really, as I mentioned, the readers like it when they can come up with their own ideas of what's going on. And, yeah, as I said, don't use unnecessary things. I mean, who cares about how much the Israelites eat and what they eat? Really, that's not relevant to the story at all. And then lack of dialogue. There was no dialogue in there, and readers love to read dialogue. They don't like long, boring paragraphs of description like that. And there was nothing to grab the reader, nothing making you want to read the next sentence or the next paragraph or the next page. And as I mentioned, too much unnecessary information. So now I'm going to read you a section of my story that replaced almost that exact same paragraph that's in my book today. They were now entering Goshen. The last rays of the setting sun still lit up the poor, dirty town. They turned a corner in the road and saw their small mud hut in the midst of many others. In front of it was Jaira's beautiful older sister, Shana. She was watching their younger brothers, Raphael and Yanni, who were 5 and 2. But something didn't seem right. Raphael and Yanni weren't laughing and running. They were sitting close to Shana on a small bench, looking pale and nervous. Shana looked up and saw them, and a look of relief spread across her formerly tight face. "Oh, no," Lemuel breathed. "What? What's wrong?" Jaira demanded. Then she heard it, a shrill, angry voice from inside the hut. Jaira immediately felt her body tense up. "Oh, no," she muttered under her breath. "Mother's at father. Again." "There you two are," Shana hissed. "What took you so long?" "We got stopped by a soldier, but we're all right," Lemuel assured her softly. "What's going on inside?" Before Shana could answer, Tirza, Jaira's 8-year-old sister, poked her head out of the door. Her face was almost white, and tears brimmed in her amber eyes. "Lemuel, Jaira," she squealed in delight. She ran towards them and threw her arms around Lemuel, burying her curly head in his chest. Her body trembled with sobs. "It's all right. Everything will be fine," Lemuel whispered, holding his little sister close. "It must be a pretty bad argument if Tirza's this upset," Jaira thought with a shudder. So isn't that better? This replaced, as I said, almost the exact same paragraph that I read to you, and it introduced a lot of the siblings, but without too much detail, and it used a lot of dialogue instead of long, boring paragraphs of description. And it also leaves you guessing about what's going on with the argument inside. So let's talk a little bit about the middle, and this is where it gets really tough. you have to do a lot of editing. And as much as you hate it, it's really going to make your story a lot better. Just persevere, buckle down, and do it. And this is where writing buddies really come in handy. They make awesome cheerleaders. And character development. This is where you should really start working on the nuances and the differences of your characters and each of their separate stories. Are they optimistic or pessimistic? This is really going to affect how they act in your story. And what is their goal in life, their goal in the story? What drives them? What do they want? What are their hobbies? Are they quiet or outgoing? Every character in your story needs to have a drive and a purpose. Otherwise, they shouldn't be in your story. Try and make every character a little different. Give them characteristic gestures. I often use Jaira shook her head to clear her thoughts. I try not to overuse it, but if you sprinkle a common gesture in there, it lets the audience feel familiar with your characters and feel like they know them on a more personal relationship. Jaira has a really good friend named Ezra, and he's more of the teasing fun one, so I often talk about Ezra's signature teasing grin. As I said, just sprinkle these in, but if you use them occasionally, it will really help the audience click with your characters. And make sure if you have similar characters that you do have differences, like I said. Jaira, my main character, is very outgoing and creative, while her best friend, Amisa, is more reserved and logical. And the mother and father are complete opposites. The mother is very fiery and headstrong, and the father is very calm and quiet and very mature. And then the thing I struggled with the most was writing the guys in my story. Since I'm not a guy, I couldn't really figure out exactly how they acted to start out with, and they all turned out to be either too perfect or they became wimps. And it was really hard to do. I really had to watch the guys in my life and start pulling out personality traits that I could use in my story. I gradually made Jaira's brother, Lemuel, more reserved and logical and gave him a love for animals and a deep compassion for people. And then Lemuel's best friend, Ezra, who I mentioned, is the passionate, fun-loving one, and he also has a love for music. And the person I struggled with the most was Eaton, who's Jaira's oldest brother. He's the romance character of the story, and he's really the hero. He saves Jaira a lot, and he's just really there for as a good big brother should be. And since I've never been in a relationship with a guy, I didn't know how 18-year-old guys acted, especially when they're in love. And so I accidentally made him into a wimp, and nobody liked him at all. They were telling me to get rid of him, you know, we don't like him, and you focus on him so much. And I was like, he's supposed to be the hero. Why do you hate him? And so I got one of my guy friends named Jake, and I told him, hey, Jake, no one likes this guy, and he's really supposed to be bold and resolute and just this firm, just this heroic presence in the story. So he took my book, and he went through and found all the sections with Eaton and told me how guys would react in those situations. I found out that guys don't gasp, which is probably why nobody liked Eaton. I use that a lot, apparently. So he really helped. And not only did I know how to relate to guys, but I was able to turn him into a hero instead of a man written by a girl. And believe me, there is a big difference. Main characters. Your main character needs to have some way that you can relate to them. They don't have to be based off of yourselves, but if they don't have some of your similar strengths or weaknesses, then you won't be able to relate to them or write them as well as you could otherwise. If you're a girl, probably start off by writing a girl as a main character. Because as I said, since we aren't guys, we don't really know how they think all the time about everything. Same thing with guys. If you're a guy starting writing, probably start with them using a guy in your story as your main character. And then making a spiritual journey. As we've talked about, we need to always be writing for God's glory. So this involves making a strong and convincing spiritual journey in our writing as well. So in my book, Jaira struggles with whether or not she believes in God, as I've mentioned. And there's times where everything is great and she's getting closer and closer to God, but then there's times something happens. There's fear or the enemies get in the way and she falls back, but she's always getting closer. And that might not be the spiritual journey of your book. Perhaps it's your character is trying to learn a new character trait like patience or kindness, or Maybe they're really bitter towards someone and need to forgive them or need to conquer a fear or just become more Christ-like. This still applies. Don't make your characters perfect by any means, because then no one will want to read your books if they can't feel like they can relate to your character in some way. But make sure they're walking down the narrow path and trying to become more godly. Have them embrace the biblical qualities of unconditional love, forgiveness, peace, joy, patience, self-control, boldness, bravery, honesty, etc. And never condone sin. Obviously, as I said, your characters can sin because we all do. No one's perfect besides Jesus. But don't ever show it as a good thing. There are so many movies and books out there that have kids, especially, like they disobey their parents or they lie or do something wrong. And maybe they get in trouble for it, but in the end, because they disobeyed, they end up saving the world or becoming the hero of the story. And while they might be punished a little bit, it still gets the message across. You might not even think about it, but that's really what they're saying, is it's okay to disobey because you're smarter than your parents. So make sure that you don't condone sin in your story. So I've talked a lot about plot. Let me show you some plot outlines here. At the beginning, of course, introduce the character and show or state the problem. The upward line is showing how everything gets tougher for your characters. And then the climax is, of course, the peak, and this is where the villain and your protagonist or main character collide. And then at the end, it's going to go down, and the conflict is resolved. Life either returns to normal, or life is changed for better or for worse. So you need to have a gradual climb where things are getting more and more intense and leading to that climax. But as I said, we want to make convincing spiritual journeys, and we do that by making the journey of the book real as well. And I don't know about you, but usually life doesn't move in one direction. Life is never good all the time, and it's never bad all the time. So here's another version of the plot outline. Have some sort of conflict at the beginning that immediately sends you into some sort of spiral. Like, for example, if you're starting a book, you probably shouldn't start with a girl sweeping the kitchen floor. That's just a little boring. Might show she's a hard worker, but that's not going to really grab anybody. But if you have the girl sweeping the floor, and all of a sudden someone breaks into the house and she's there all by herself, that might grab people, and that also might introduce the problem that you're going to state. The little dips there are when fears, disappointments, or villains get in the way and cause problems in the story and aren't letting the character achieve their goals. And then, of course, the climax, and then the resolution. And that's really what's going to make your journey real, is having those dips and that emotional journey like we talked about in Courageous. So let's talk a little bit about editors and readers. Once you get to draft 3 or 4 in your book, you should really start talking to some editors and readers. And there's a difference between professional editors and editors, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And professional editors are the people who you pay to edit your book, and these are people who do it for a living, who edit books all the time. And editors are people you know who are critical about movies and books, and these could be bloggers you know, English majors. I'm sure you all have a friend you'll go to the movies with, and they'll sit there and critique the thing for the entire length of the movie. Or books, the same thing. I have a lot of friends who do that too. So I want to warn you about one thing with professional editors. They do have a lot of pros, but they have some cons that I want you to be aware of as well. Professional editors are obviously very good at what they do and will cover your manuscript in red ink and give you great feedback and edits. However, professional editors don't really have a relationship with you, and they really don't know what your goals are for the story. And I had a friend who wrote a book and sent it to a professional editor. He took the book and completely tore it apart. And he had a lot of good comments, but he also took away the writer's voice and edited the story as he would write it, not as how my friend would write it. And my friend has struggled with writing ever since because he took away her voice, because she's like, oh, he's a professional editor, so what he's saying, I have to do this. And not necessarily, no, because it took away her voice and the content of the story. So I actually never had a professional editor. I had a ton of the normal editors. I got close friends who'd be really critical of my work, but who knew the rules of English and who had done a ton of acting, so they also knew about character development as well. And these people worked with my goals, but they would come out and tell me exactly when something wasn't going to work, or it was dull, or just didn't make sense. My publishers had a professional editor come in at the end for copy editing and grammatical issues and fine-tuning everything, which is fine because they aren't changing the content of your story. They're just making it better. And then readers. Readers are the people who are in your targeted age range who are going to help you make your book better. I had tons of families and people from the ages from 7 to 22 read my book and give me their feedback and tell me if they liked it, what they didn't like, what I could do to make it better to appeal to them. Listen to your readers even more than you listen to your editors, because your readers are the ones buying the story, not your editors. If editors say to change things that the readers love, prayerfully consider whether or not to change it, because you could be changing some of your content to the point where your readers aren't going to like it anymore. And while I'm talking about editors and readers, I want to just talk a little bit about pride in the Christian writer. And pride is the topic of pride is something that's important for everyone, not just writers. There's a lot of dangers to pride. I've noticed that many Christian young people can be kind of closed off from other Christians and even the world because we think, oh, we're Christians, we're better than them, and you know, we have God, and our lives are in great shape. But as soon as we think that, we're falling into pride. And pride is the worst sin you can commit. That's what got Satan kicked out of heaven, and God abhors pride. And I found that out because last summer I was in a play based on the life of Jesus. We were doing a Bible study, and I got to the section in the book that talked about pride. And I immediately thought, oh, I don't have a pride issue. I'm going to whiz through this chapter, which is obviously showed that I had an issue with pride. So I started reading it, and I was just so convicted and realizing how my fear of man and the expectations of man was pride. And I was just so convicted and realized how hypocritical and judgmental I was of other people. And I'm saying this to help you to please not grow up prideful and judgmental, because it's going to affect your relationship with God, and you're going to be a dead Christian. And once your relationship with the God is affected, that will also affect your writing and your relationship with everyone else in the world around you. But you might be wondering, okay, how does this apply to writing? Well, unfortunately, many authors are very prideful. They think that they are awesome writers, that they have all the answers, and that they can do it without God or without the help of other people. And we can't. We have to seek help. You can't do this on your own. I can't do this on my own. God put people in our lives to help us as iron sharpening iron. And if you don't let other people look at your book and read it and critique it, your writing really won't be very good. You need help. It is really hard, I know, but with God's help, you can do it. You can seek help, and you can write something wonderful and powerful for God's glory. You have to empty yourself of yourself and be filled with God and His Spirit. Be open and teachable. I've met many, many budding young authors who wouldn't accept help at all. And unfortunately, their writing just was not very good. Either that, or they had a really good talent, but when we would point out errors, they wouldn't listen at all. And their writing wasn't getting any better because some of the errors were pretty big. And we would tell them, you are a great writer, you really are, but you just have to fix this. And they wouldn't do it. Really, people like that don't go for the easy way out, because publishers aren't going to want to work with people who aren't teachable. They can pick up pretty quickly if they want to change something in your story and you're being prideful. And sometimes the best ideas aren't your own. I already mentioned that Brian Davis gave me the idea for adding Asenath, who's the character goes through all four of my books. And that wasn't my own idea. I was a part of a writing group for a period of time, and when I would get stuck or write something that just wasn't very good, I'd ask them for help, and they would throw out lots of ideas at me, particularly for the plagues. It was really hard describing the 10 plagues in a dramatic way like I hoped I could. And sometimes it came across really cheesy, or it just wasn't scary or didn't grab you at all. And so I had a lot of help with those. But there's also the thing as being too humble. So in humility, evaluate every feedback you get. Because if you take everything that people tell you you're going to start losing your voice and losing your story. Because other people are prideful too, and they might think that they have the best idea for making your story a bestseller. But if you can't listen to other people all the time, because you could end up compromising your morals. And if you live in the fear of men's suggestions, your writing won't end up being your story for God's glory. People will want to write your story for you. Just be aware of that. People will want to do that. Radical changes. I had a couple of editors who I loved very much who gave me some pretty radical suggestions. They suggested turning my series of four books into one giant book. And they also suggested cutting out some characters entirely from my story. And that's pretty radical, but these were people I trusted and who I knew were talking, knew what they were talking about. So I've had to pray a lot, and I had to use a lot of wisdom. My dad's one of my biggest critics, and we talked together and tried to work everything out logically. And while we didn't take all of their suggestions, we decided to stick with the plan of doing four books. But one of the things my editors mentioned was that these characters were really clogging up the story and taking away from the plot. So I realized I couldn't delete them because I needed them for the other books. But I could minimize their importance in this book. So I really made them more insignificant. So that way, when I need to pull them out, they're still there, but they aren't getting in the way, which was what my editors were complaining about. So finishing it up. As we've said, the climax is the main part of your story, and that's what we're going to be working towards. So end with a bang. Make sure the climax is big and climactic. Even if it's not a huge battle, it still needs to be suspenseful. There should be either conflict with the villain or a struggle with your character's deep inner soul. And then resolve everything but add mystery if you have another book coming. After the climax, make sure there is a short time of resolution, like I mentioned in the slides. Either the guy gets the girl, there's a happy change in life, or family relationships are resolved. Or, if there's another book coming, have some mystery. There's a character in my first book who, at the end, she runs off into the night, hurt and bleeding, and I never say what happens to her. So, that definitely is something that I hope will get people to start reading the second book. And then revise again. Yes, revise again, as many times as you have to. I did at least 10 good drafts of my book, probably about 30 by the time you count just going through it and checking for grammatical errors and typos. And it really does help, because then you're going to find out, particularly when you're writing the climax, some people will end their books right at the climax or even mid-sentence if they're going to start talking or going to be writing another book. And that really wants to make you grab it or make you buy the next book. So make sure that all your revisions make sense. And then add in what you missed and edit out anything cheesy. So for adding in what you missed, I had a lot of plot holes. There were people that I added in just the last couple of drafts. I added in Asenath, as I mentioned. She wasn't originally in the story. She was added in pretty late, generally speaking, into my story. I added in Amasai, who's an Israelite overseer, because my dad realized in the last draft, you know what? Egyptian overseers would probably not be coming to the Israelites' homes because the Israelites were so beneath them. So we added Amasai in, and he really adds a lot to certain parts of the story, as you'll see if you read it. And then the Prince Ramses, in order for my audience to be able to learn more about the Egyptians and really be able to relate to them, I have one of Jairus' friends named Ada, who's the personal attendant to the queen in the palace. So you get to meet the queen, and you get to meet the pharaoh, and we realized in the last draft we never introduced the prince. So we added him in just in the last couple drafts so you could sympathize more with the Egyptians and learn more about their history and what they did, and more just about history in general. And then, yeah, edit out anything cheesy. I found stuff that was bad, even in my last draft. So read parts over and cut out details that are ridiculous or don't make sense. And then about publishing. What I'm going to tell you today is just what I've learned from research about publishing. You really have to figure out what your own goals are for publishing. And I hope this will help you narrow down your search with what I'm going to tell you. So self-publishing pros and cons. The pros of self-publishing are that you can keep your copyright, you have complete control, and everything looks just the way you want it to look. There are many places where you can now self-publish very easily and order books on demand instead of having tons of books lying around your house waiting to be sold. There's places like Lulu and Exlibris that actually are, they can, Exlibris especially, seems to have a pretty decent self-publishing package. Small publishers' pros and cons. The pros are you have a more personal relationship. You can be very involved and not feel like that you have no access to your bosses. They help with marketing, so you don't have to do it all yourself, and it keeps your copyright if that's important to you. And your best bet is to go with a smaller publishing house if you do want to keep your copyright. You still get to be the face of the book, and you still get to do all the important, fun, time-consuming stuff, and you still get to interact with your audiences. Royalty fees can be very decent when you're going with smaller publishing houses. The cons of that are you might not have a bigger reach as some of the bigger publishing houses, so your book might not get too far to start off with, and it also requires more work from you than just handing off your book to some publisher, but as I said, you get more control. And the cons of self-publishing, you don't even have a small publisher to help you. You have to do almost all the marketing yourself, and it generally won't look as professional, which means it won't sell as much, as it takes a lot to get a book into a major Christian bookstore. So big publishers' pros and cons. The pros are that they claim to do everything for you, but they might not. And they will definitely get your book out there and get it selling, and they look professional. The cons are that getting into a big publisher can take years. Especially if you're a new writer, you have to fill out tons of query letters and know published authors to help you work up the ladder. And once you do work up the ladder, sometimes your book just gets dropped by the wayside. And since they have the copyright, you're stuck not being able to do anything with your book at all. Most big publishing houses will take your copyright from you, but there are a few that will let you keep your copyright. I've heard that Bethany Publishing House will let you keep your copyright, or they'll give you a date and time when your book should be published by in your contract. And if getting a bigger reach is important to you, then maybe you should go with a bigger publisher, because as I said, they will get your book selling more than some others might. And then also, you only get a very, very small percentage of royalties compared to self-publishing or even publishing with small companies. I've heard that as little as 5% of the money made on a book goes back to the writer from big publishing companies. My search and experience, and after a lot of prayer, I went with a small publishing house called Great Waters Press. I knew the owners, but they told me they would not accept my book unless it was good enough for them to put their name on it. And thankfully, they did decide it was worthy of being published by Great Waters Press and took on the task of publishing my book. And it's been a lot of work, but it's been so rewarding. I've been able to keep my copyright, and I've been able to advertise my book and really be in charge of what happens and making it turn out the way I wanted it to. But my publishers gave me a ton of advice on marketing and publishing my book, and they worked really hard to get my name out there into the homeschooling community and beyond. And I have an incredibly dedicated team behind me making all this stuff happen. And I really don't care that I might not get as much money as I would with a big publishing company. I know that my publishers care about the message of my book and getting it out to the world, and that's what really matters, sharing God's message with everyone we meet and everyone who reads our work, not just the money. And it's truly been an amazing journey. So the end result. I remember when the day I signed my contract, just how exciting it was, as I just signed the dotted line and just knew all of my work for 7 years was finally paying off. And working on cover art and illustrations, it was so satisfying to see my book come to life and to have a say in what everyone looked like. My publisher's got a young man from my church named Mike Slayton to do the publishing the illustrating, and he did such a good job. And then today, actually, I got to hold my first book for the first time. And my brother and some of my friends filmed my reaction, and they will tell you I cried because I was so happy. It was such an amazing experience just to really hold it in my hands and just to see it and read it for myself in book form. But remember in all of this, to give the glory where it's due, and that's God. Remember that any success that you have is because of God working through you, not anything you did on your own accord. Always give him the glory for everything you do and everything you write. Because he died for you, he saves you, and he deserves all the respect, praise, and honor you can give him, plus more. So, parting words. God has big plans for you. Open yourself up to the possibility of doing great things for his glory. And don't waste these valuable years. While you're single, not in college, and not married is the perfect time for you to start working on your writing. And when you write, make sure you're always writing for God's glory. Remember that wealth or riches aren't important. Look to Jesus and his example and be humble. Focus on the message of your book, and that's what people need to hear, so work on getting it out there. So I have a copy of my book right here to show you, Cry from Egypt. This book is available for the first time ever today, which has been so exciting for me to see. These are the special, the sticker on top says pre-publication review copy. These are the special books that the big reviewers get. It's the same ones that we're going to have, basically exactly the same as the ones that we'll be printing later. But it just doesn't have, it's a couple blank pages that say, save for endorsements later. As homeschoolers, I know you're going to end up studying the Bible, character, and ancient Egypt, and this story really ties everything together and will make a great asset to your library that your whole family will love. And I'll be at the booth for the rest of today and on and off for the next couple days. And also on Saturday, my illustrator, Mike Slayton, is going to be here for those of you who are interested in seeing how that process came about, or maybe you're drawing and just, or maybe you're going to do your own illustrations and just want to know ideas of how to do that. He's going to bring his concept art to show you all. And lastly, I have written here, I have a Facebook page called Hopeful Stories, and you can like that, and that will keep you updated on where I'm going to be, where I'm speaking, and what's going on with my next three books. And my email address, for those of you who have any questions that I don't address today or at the booth when you see me, is hope@hopefulstories.com. And my two writing websites are hopefulstories.com and acryfromegypt.com. So for some reason, if you don't get to talk to me this weekend, that's how you can get in contact with me. We are at the booth number 78, Great Waters Press booth. As I said, I'm associated with them. If any of you know of Hal and Melanie Young, they're going to be speaking a couple times today or over the course of the weekend. And we have some other books there as well for you. We're on the lower level, behind the Vision Forum table and across from Bob Jones. Other books here, we have a book about Raising Real Men, which is a great book if you have boys or if you're trying to figure out what you should be aspiring to as a young man. And it was the Christian Small Publishers Association 2011 Book of the Year. And one of the newest releases we have is Children in Church, which talked about nurturing a heart of worship in your children. And lastly, you guys know I like history, so we have some CDs available called Hero Tales, which are dramatized history stories from the Revolutionary War all the way to the Civil War with music and sound effects. And anyway, so that's what we have available. Please come see me afterwards. We do have a couple of minutes if anyone has any questions for me that I didn't answer today. Any questions? Yes. How can you get one of my books? So we are selling them at the booth today. We have a limited number of copies. Because this is the one that the reviewers are getting. It's $12.50 for a book. With tax, I believe that's $13.34. I have a mathematician down there working everything out for me. So you can get that at the booth, in booth number 78. Any other questions? How did I choose my title? Oh, that's a good question. I actually had a different title to start off with. My title was actually God Will Deliver Us. And my publishers didn't like it. And I was trying to figure out why, but they're like, well, you know, it doesn't really tell you what the book's about. I mean, you're asking God to deliver you, but A Cry from Egypt sounds more suspenseful, and it also lets you know that it is based in Egypt. So what happened is my publishers and I just threw out lots of random ideas and eventually settled on that one. So, and also just really getting your friends to help you, too, have them read and come up with some general ideas. That's what we did. Does that answer your question? Okay. Anyone else? Yes? They're the only publishers I approached. There was one other publisher that we were talking to. I was talking to someone at Lifeway Christian Bookstores. But after much prayer, we decided that God felt like he was leading me to go down this path. So, yeah, so I did approach. That's, Lifeway would be the second one. Any other questions? Does that answer your question, sir? Okay. Okay, so the question is, how did I first start writing? And do I prefer writing on paper and then transferring to the computer or starting on the computers? That's the question? Okay, well, I started writing, as I said, it was a school project. So I just researched a lot, and I had to pray about it really to get some inspiration, but I picked a character and then picked what I wanted her to be like, and then tried to match that with what was happening in the Bible. I started out by writing the part where Moses turns the Nile River into blood, because I basically had the character being there, so that started out with just her reaction to seeing what happens and what Moses does. And a lot of people I know actually do like to write on paper to start off with, because they say that when they're writing it slower, so they can check every word, and then they can see if they're using words more. So I have only written a couple sections on paper, usually when I was on trips and didn't have my computer with me. But a lot of people do say that's the better way to go. I don't really care one way or the other. It's kind of personal preference, really. Time for one more? Yes?
How do you get inspired?
Oh, gosh, how do I get inspired? Well, God mostly. My family also was inspiration for a lot of my characters, especially for the young boys. I have two younger brothers, so that really helped. Jaira actually is based a lot off of myself and my struggles. She has to come to grips with who God is, and I grew up in a Christian home, and there's a time of questioning in your life when, you know, you're just like, is God really real? Is what I've been fed all these years, is that true? And I really wanted people to know how to relate to that. And as I said, a lot of it's based off the Bible, so my inspiration did come a lot from there as well. But yeah, there are times when you will get writer's block and get stuck, and that's where people come in handy, and writing groups come in handy. Does that answer your question? Does that help? Okay. One more? Yeah? I don't, but oh, I forgot to mention, if you come down to the booth, we can sign you up to get an email of my slideshow presentation, if that would help at all. As I know, I went kind of fast through this, and there's a lot I could say that I didn't say here, so I know I went fast through that. So if that would help anyone, just to have that step-by-step details written down there, you can come to the booth, and we'll sign you up for an email of that slideshow presentation. One more? Yes? Okay, so when you write a chapter, should you just do the chapter number, or should you do the chapter number and a title? It depends on if you can write chapter titles. I don't know how many of you read G.A. Henty. He has horrible chapter titles. Marie is rescued. Well, thanks for ruining the book. So if you can write good, grabbing chapter titles, especially for younger kids, like it better if they do have chapter titles. My age range is 7 to 22, or more, I guess 7 to 16 or 18, generally speaking. So, yeah, that one, I did chapter titles, but if you're writing for older or fiction, it's not necessarily as important. Just make sure if you do write chapter titles that they are grabbing. Thank you so much for coming today. I'm so glad I was able to speak to you. And I'll be at the booth, as I said, if you have any other questions. Thank you so much, and God bless.